This is the IBJ Podcast for the week of October 1st, 2018. I'm Mason King. My guest today is Ellie Sims, who, at the age of 23, 2 years after turning her love of honeybees into a data-driven startup, was honored at the 2018 MIRA Awards as the brightest rising star in the Indiana tech ecosystem. Sims founded a beekeeping club as a student at Indiana University in 2014. After delivering a speech to the IU Foundation's board of directors, she was urged to dream bigger. So she and her top lieutenants outlined a business aimed at combating the depopulation of beehives with data collection and analysis. In 2016, their business plan won $100,000 in an on-campus competition for entrepreneurs, and it was off to the races. Last week, Sims was a panelist at the Forbes Ag Tech Summit in Indianapolis, a two-day convocation of national leaders in agriculture and technology hosted by Forbes magazine. Now, she stepped out to talk with us about the challenges of being a young entrepreneur, the benefits of having the right team, and what bees can teach us about running a successful business. One word of warning, we set up in the Indiana State Museum, and within a few minutes, we were attacked by a swarm of schoolchildren. Thankfully, the buzz subsided. Okay, here's our conversation.
So we're doing the B2B segment.
That's right. This is a B2B podcast. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I should have come up with that. Okay, you spend a lot of time with bees. I mean, you've been tending bees for 6 years?
Yes.
6, 7 years?
Yeah.
Okay. They're very sophisticated. They're very team-oriented. Give me a good bee analogy for running a successful business, i.e., what do bees have to teach us about running an effective and successful business?
Well, the women do all the work. So, good stuff there. You asked me, that's my favorite thing about bees.
Wait a second. What about the drones?
They do nothing.
The drones really do nothing.
They just eat and party. They're like college kids. Yeah, and they get kicked out of the hive in the winter. They actually get killed.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so the female bees are obviously the queen.
Yes.
And then...
All the workers
are women.
Yes.
Okay. And that's analogous to you in what way?
I think how the world is and should be.
Very good. Okay. How many times have you been stung, like, by a stinger?
Oh, my goodness. I can't count. Literally could not count. It's a requirement. It's in the job description work at the Bee Corp.
Would that be daily?
No, not daily. We visit the hives maybe once a week, twice a week to collect data. I'm actually allergic to bees.
You've got to be kidding.
I'm not kidding.
That's, yeah. I mean, that's toxic.
It is. I have an EpiPen I carry with me in the car when I do beekeeping. I limit the amount of time I'm out in the hive, so my co-founder Wyatt does most work. But I've still been stung after finding out I was allergic, and I did okay. I developed the allergy while beekeeping. So my first few years of beekeeping, I was not allergic. I used to beekeep in dresses and things like that. And I developed the allergy. It's very rare for beekeepers.
What is it you loved about bees?
They're fascinating creatures. We have a live hive here at the Forbes Ag Tech Summit. And my favorite thing is just watching them all day. I could spout off bee facts all day. I'll give you one. So maybe one of the most interesting is bees actually communicate through pheromones. So we have developed language to communicate. They communicate through smell. Right. That helps them tell themselves what to do. And I could go on for days.
Yeah. I'd read that bees, when they come back to the hive and say, hey, I found this amazing patch of flowers, that they actually have a bit of a dance or their movements communicate to the other bees where it is directionally.
It's the waggle dance, yes.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, researchers have mapped it and were able to, you know, measure those dances, and they actually figured out how fast they shake and how long they shake for in a straight line all indicates where the flowers are. It's incredible.
Let me go back to being stung.
Yeah.
Here's another terrible analogy. How many times so far have you been stung in a metaphorical sense when you were kind of hit by sort of a sudden shock or surprise while you were putting the business together or kind of running in the first couple of years?
Oh, plenty. I mean, entrepreneurs run into that weekly, daily. The hive we have at the Forbes Ag Tech Summit right now broke. I used it 2 weeks ago in LA for a conference. It broke being shipped back. Right. So we have a hive with shattered plexiglass. And so we had 3 days till the Forbes Ag Tech Summit. We had to buy plexiglass, find someone in town that could cut it. And that was just last week. I mean, this is daily. I was just saying last night how the power was out during the dinner reception. We're used to those kind of putting out fires. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That sort of ability to kind of roll with it, is that something that you have naturally, or is that something you have to develop?
So we do a lot of personality assessments at the B Corp. So yeah. We're very self-aware. Yeah. I am one of those people that likes to shoot from the hip, approaches problems as they come. Luckily, my co-founder, Wyatt, he's a planner. He wants to prepare for all the worst scenarios. So we're a really good yin and yang in that way. Some things you have to shoot from the hip for or are unexpected, and I'm really good at handling those. And Wyatt's incredible when it comes to products for our customers. He's planning everything out. We have every worst case scenario planned out. So he supports me in that way.
Yeah. We know beehives fail.
Yes.
And they're failing more nowadays in the last 10 years than we believe that they had in history for a number of reasons. I mean, a lot of environmental factors. What does the failure of hives tell us about surviving as a startup?
I mean, bees fail less. It's about 30% on average.
Okay.
So invest in bees, not businesses. Totally kidding.
Okay.
I think, when I lost my first hive, it was devastating. I was just talking to a backyard beekeeper about it. You get very attached to it. And then you run 70 and you lose hives monthly and you get very used to it. And I think actually beekeeping prepares you for, okay, some things are not going to work out. You're going to do everything perfect. You're going to have the best shot at it. And some of your hives just die. I think just like businesses, it's that combination of luck and hard work. Mm-hmm. So I think it's taught me a lot about making sure I'm mentally understanding of all the roads this business could go.
Why does a hive fail?
Oh, multiple reasons. I mean, really, it depends on the time of year. Your queen could die. It could get overrun by diseases. It could run out of food. It could freeze to death. Mm. It could get knocked over. I mean, there's hundreds of ways hives can fail.
So it's not necessarily something that you can plan for and eventually just stop from happening.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll just happen.
Yes.
Reasons beyond your control.
Yes.
So that would be
many of them
thing.
You can fix and see as they're happening. Yeah. Sometimes it's totally reasons beyond your control.
Yeah. I lied. I've got one more terrible.
Okay. I like these.
Terrible. Okay.
These are fun.
Is it appropriate to think of you as, God help me,
don't
the queen,
queen
bee.
Don't. I knew you were going to say
or is this set up a different way? The way you guys run your business.
One, I actually, there's a Polaroid picture of me at the co-working space next door, and it says Queen Bee, and it's crossed out. It says, don't call her that, because Beyonce is the real Queen Bee. And we're doing a disservice to Beyonce. I would be honored, but...
If that's the only reason I understand.
So also in these personality tests, we have determined that I'm also a collaborative leader. So I want consensus. We're not always going to have consensus in the business, but I very much want to make sure the whole team is behind it. So when we're setting goals, every single team member is bringing their goals to the table. We do that monthly, quarterly, and annually.
Mm-hmm.
So I very much want that. And Wyatt is very much a partner in this relationship. Yep. Certain things you got to bring the hammer down on, but it's rare. That's not my leadership style.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. There was something that I think I had read about you guys, is that you do a lot of debriefing. And I think I know what that is, but tell me what it means to you and why that's helpful.
Where'd you read that?
I think it was from an interview, I think.
Smart. I bet that was Wyatt. That was, yeah, we do. We debrief everything. So after Forbes, we'll debrief and go over the event and figure out what happened. Anytime we make big decisions or do a product rollout, we debrief and look back, because I think you're going to learn the most in a business from what has just happened. And it's best to reflect right then and there. So we have made sure we learn from all of our mistakes. We really embrace them. Mm-hmm. There's a crushed smoker in our office that happened a couple weeks ago, got ran over. Smoker is used in the beehive. It's a tool. And I made a joke to Wyatt that we got to put a plaque on it and give it away as some sort of company award for employees to embrace that element that we fail all the time. And those are our advantages.
When you say that you make a lot of mistakes, what's the one that really sticks out?
Well, one that's been thematic for us recently is, so our product line, Queen's Guard, it was doing well in the hobbyist sideliner space. And the mistake we made was assuming that the smaller beekeepers had thought about their hives and managed their hives in a similar way as larger beekeepers. The big guys were just doing it at scale. We found out that was not the case. And we embraced that and dove into what the big commercial beekeepers do have problems with and edited and adjusted. Mm. So I think we owned it. We owned that, we made an assumption here and that was wrong. And it's those are that kind of agility. That's what helps you succeed as a business, we believe.
How many employees does Bee Corp have now?
We have 4 full-time.
Okay.
And we normally do part-time internships as well.
You went, I think, pretty quickly, if not immediately, from being a student to being a CEO.
Yeah, yes.
You went to see it during your last semester?
It was, yeah. Yes. I did a accelerated master's. So technically last year, senior year, but first year of the master's degree.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, right. So we won the business plan competition. I had a few months left of that undergrad first year, finished, graduated, and then went part-time with the master's degree. And just finished in May.
Mm-hmm. What was the big adjustment from going from, I mean, you were, I think you could be easily considered a student leader to a business leader.
Mm-hmm. Oh man, luckily it evolved over time. Mm-hmm. We're noticing it now as you bring on new employees and you work with interns, how far Wyatt and I have come from being students, just professionally. We forget all those little lessons we learned along the way. And it sort of has hit us as we've onboarded employees and realized, we have to teach this or that. So I think that was definitely a wake-up call. And I like working way better than student life. It's actually way less stressful than being a grad student. So,
well, if somebody, an enterprising college student is thinking, I'm going to start a business right now, is there one or two bits of advice you would say? I mean, this is where you're going to find maybe the biggest transition.
Yeah.
Or the biggest step you're going to have to take in order to be an effective business leader.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I would say start while you're in school. Don't wait till after, because there's so many resources that the universities in our state provide for entrepreneurs and startups, and you get access to those when you're a student. So do not wait, because you're also mitigating risk. You can be working on this business while you're working towards a degree. So that's for your personal risk. Don't wait. Then when you get out, there's many different roads people take, but if you start in school and maybe you get funding, you can launch right into doing it full time like we did.
When I was trying to explain to myself what B Corp does, it occurred to me that this is kind of sounds like almost like a human resources consultancy, except it's like a B resources consultancy.
Yeah.
Is that even close?
I don't know. I wish I had a way to explain it, like Uber for bees or whatever. We're getting it down to like a minute, which is good.
Okay. So give us real quick.
Okay.
Give us a minute with as few buzzwords as you can.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah.
So growers rent beehives to pollinate their crops. They have to do this. This is the way it is in agriculture for specialty crops, which is the food we eat on our tables, a specialty. I'm trying to not use trade words
good,
here.
Good.
The way those hives are priced are based on the number of bees in the hive. So our company actually helps those growers price the hives. They're already paying for this through manual inspections, where you actually open the hive and look at the frames to try to guess how many bees are in. So we're offering a tech alternative to that. We can do it through infrared imaging. We can actually take a picture and tell them the population of the hive.
No, there are a few products that you recently introduced, and you can tell me about those.
Yes. So, well, we worked on Queen's Guard and QGPS. Those were some of the products that were working well in the beekeeping space. But this new shift we've been doing for the last couple months, stayed pretty quiet about it. This is solely for growers. So growers are already paying for this service through the manual inspection. So this is, we've pivoted towards those guys.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. The two that you just previously mentioned, the Queen's Guard and the other one?
QGPS.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Are those still active services or product lines?
So we're still on the intellectual property.
Yeah.
And we'd love to apply that to other sources later on. So we're still holding those in. But we actually made the decision to just pause the products for now. Talked to all of our customers. They were all supportive. They really believed in the vision of the company, and that was their sole.
So that's a big pivot. I mean, you went from, within a couple of years, establishing two pretty major product lines to deciding to put them on pause.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty gutsy, don't you think?
It is. It is. But it was once we interviewed over 100 commercial beekeepers and growers, we knew right away those product lines were not ready to scale. So we just tweaked them, adjusted them. And what we've brought now to market, contracts that have come in, a single contract has matched all previous revenue. So it was, we're starting to get indicators that was a good decision. It's a scary few months, but I'm so glad we did it and made that leap.
We'll get right back to Mason's interview with Ellie Sims from the B Corp. But first, we wanted to direct you to another story that came out of the Forbes Ag Tech Summit. Professor Torbert's Orange Corn was one of 50 firms featured at the summit's startup showcase. And you can read about the company's story and why orange corn is more nutritious at IBJ.com. Now, back to the podcast.
Okay, we're back with Ellie Sims. Give me the two-minute drill. What is the two-minute history?
It was actually in Ohio. I Googled environmental volunteering, saw a beekeeper needed help, fell in love with beekeeping after volunteering with him all summer, came back to IU, said maybe other students might want to be exposed to beekeeping. IU, the actual Hutton Honors College at IU, gave me a grant to start a beekeeping program. That grew into a club. The club grew in success very quickly, and I was presenting to the IU Foundation, and three of those board members pulled me aside and said, we love what you've done with the club, but we want you to dream bigger on this beekeeping problem, and we want to help you.
Wow. Had you, prior to that, thought of this as a potential business?
No. I also didn't even realize starting the beekeeping club and the program was entrepreneurial until afterwards, thinking about being asked, you know, had you done entrepreneurial things before? I had never really realized that that was the path I was setting myself towards. Mm.
And the problem that that you initially were starting off
with? Yeah, it was colony collapse disorder at the time. Now really hive loss. That's colony collapse is just one disease. I was studying environmental science, so I've forever have wanted my career to be about solving environmental problems. So the fact that honeybees were in a decline and are harder to keep than ever interests me because they're essential for a third of the food we eat in the U.S.
And then it turns into a company.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so after the board approached me, I had read a study that used technology to research beehives, and I said, what if we applied technology to the industry and actually help the industry better manage hives? I brought that to those board members 2 weeks later with my co-founders. We thought of the name the B Corp at that meeting after deciding to be a benefit corporation, and we were off the ground.
And very quickly, you entered what I would consider to be a pitch contest. It's not necessarily that.
It was a business plan contest. Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, you were just a few weeks into it.
Yeah.
And then tell me what happened.
We did not think we would win, and we ended up winning off of our idea and won a $100,000 investment to get started. And that's what really encouraged us. Let's go full time with this and let's give this a shot.
So your advice to future entrepreneurs is to win a contest with $100,000.
If they can. Yeah. Oh my goodness. There's so many student pitch competitions. There's so much money you can get as a student from pitch competitions.
Okay.
Many startups have been funded starting that way.
Now, you recently were awarded, I believe, the Rising Star Award through the MIR Awards in Indianapolis, kind of central Indiana base.
Yeah, tech points. Award. Yeah. Right.
One of the things that I believe that the judges said, in particular about you, they noted your uncanny ability to secure investment and non-dilutive grant funding. I assume that means you're really good at raising money. How did you become really good at raising money?
No idea. It's a numbers game a little bit.
Yeah.
you put yourself out there as much as possible. I get plenty of no's. But when those yeses come in, it makes it worth it. So I spend a lot of time grant writing, meeting with investors, those types of things.
How much have you raised total so far?
It's about $750,000.
Have you started generating revenue?
Yes. Yeah, we've been generating revenue since early 2017.
Can you just give me a sense of kind of ballpark, like how much?
No.
As you're innovating? Not going to tell me?
No. Sorry.
Okay, that's fine. How many customers do you have?
Yeah, so, well, we just pivoted to this new product. Right now, we actually just started selling a couple weeks ago. So we're working on building everyone up.
Okay. Yeah. So is the pivot really kind of a start from scratch proposition?
Well, so we had done 2 years of thermal analysis research in beehives. So we really had a good head start. And infrared, that is thermal imaging. So that really helped us very quickly put together the model, make it accurate so it could actually be used in the industry. Mm-hmm. But it was a new market segment. So we were really out there for the first time meeting people, and that we've been building since June.
What is keeping you awake at night?
Well, right now we have a lot going on in the business. This is our main sales season. This is also, we're in two accelerators.
Tell me about the two accelerators.
Yeah, so we're in the G-Beta Indy program, which is fantastic. They've got great connections. It's really helped, too, because we're sort of early on this, after this pivot. It's helping us rethink about market size and help describe the pivot in the best way in the new model. And then we're also in Y Combinator Startup School. And luckily, all of this is getting us better prepared for the next phase of our grant application, the next round. So it's really good timing. But it's a lot, right? We're putting a new product out in the market in February, March. We've got the product development, we've got the sales, and we've got all these accelerators. And so it's, though we're busier than ever, it's helped us realize what's non-important. So we've dropped things we were doing that we realized aren't essential to the business. So I think it's helped with focus more than anything.
Before we wind things up, I wanted to ask you about this event that you're attending today. You're a speaker at the Forbes AgTech Indianapolis event. Tell me a little bit about your role in this event and why it's valuable to have something like this here.
So this is an incredible event. This year, we're actually demoing. We have a booth and we're speaking. So we've been very fortunate to be featured. The Forbes AgTech Summit, they've been doing this for 5 years, I believe, in California, Salinas. I went out there in June. It's a fantastic event. During networking, you're literally bumping into, I would walk up to random groups of people and I ended up meeting everyone I needed to meet that I didn't even know was there in the industry. And we've really got that here in Indianapolis. So the goal was to show off the Midwest. Out West, it's most of our specialty crops, so things that make it to our table. Here in the Midwest, we are the hub of row crops, which are your commodities, your corn, your soybeans, your wheat. And you have all the powerhouses in this industry right here, right now. And they picked Indianapolis to show that off because they were impressed with what we had here with Agrinovis and IEDC. Mm-hmm. So we've been very fortunate. We hope this can be something that we can keep doing year after year.
What is your goal? I mean, I assume that maybe you made a list of things you want to get out of this.
Yeah.
At the end of the day today, what do you want to have accomplished?
Well, we need to make contacts. So we've made some amazing contacts already, even after one day in the business. So it really helps us network. And then we're also meeting people who we need to maintain relationships with. So we're building that rapport too. Okay. Ag is very relationship based. So this gives you that face-to-face time you need.
What is the ultimate Ellie goal?
My goal for my career is to solve environmental problems. So whether that's one problem for my whole career, like food production and honeybees, or it's other problems, I want to make sure every hour is making an impact on the world. As long as I'm doing that, I will be fulfilled. Yeah.
Okay. I'm glad you're doing it.
Thank you.
All right. Best of luck to you. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
My thanks again to Ellie Sims. Before we go, I want to draw your attention to a couple of stories in this week's print edition of the Indianapolis Business Journal. Lindsay Aridoni brings us up to date on the Patachou Foundation, the not-for-profit founded by preeminent Indianapolis restaurateur Martha Hoover. Created in 2013 to target childhood food insecurity, the foundation today provides more than 35,000 meals annually to kids at local schools and summer camps. Also, in this week's issue, Haley Colombo explores how the city's Criminal Justice Center project will transform the Twin Air neighborhood on the east side, as well as the quadrant of downtown that will lose its jails and courts and related businesses. Again, you can find these stories in the print edition of IBJ or, of course, online at IBJ.com. As always, thank you for listening to the podcast. We'll be back again next week.